At which point, all that's left is somehow coaxing the psychopathic hellhound holding our entire existence in his jaw that he should just abandon his silly scheme for universal domination. What could be simpler? I think we have every reason to feel optimistic.
Daniel glanced out the open window. The sun was passing over the dormitory now. Luce had to squint to look outside.
We need to leave as soon as possible.
Okay, Luce said. I have to go home, then pack, get my passport. Her mind whirled in 100 directions as she started making a mental to-do list. Her parents would be at the mall for at least another couple of hours, enough time for her to dash in and get her things together.
Oh, cute!
Annabelle laughed, flitting over to them, her feet inches off the ground. Her wings were muscular and dark silver like a thundercloud, protruding through the invisible slits in her hot pink T-shirt.
Sorry to butt in, but you've never traveled with an angel before, have you?
Sure she had. The feeling of Daniel's wings soaring her body through the air was as natural as anything. Maybe her flights had been brief, but they'd been unforgettable. They were when Luce felt closest to him, his arms threaded around her waist, his heart beating close to hers, his white wings protecting them, making Luce feel unconditionally and impossibly loved. She'd flown with Daniel dozens of times in dreams, but only 3 times in her waking hours. Once over the hidden lake behind Sword and Cross, another time along the coast at Shoreline, and down from the clouds to the cabin just the previous night.
I guess we've never flown that far together, she said at last.
Just getting to first base seems to be a problem for you two,
Cam couldn't resist saying. Daniel ignored him.
Under normal circumstances, I think you'd enjoy the trip.
His expression turned stormy.
But we don't have room for normal for the next 9 days.
Luce felt his hands on the backs of her shoulders, gathering her hair and lifting it off her neck. He kissed her along the neckline of her sweater as he wrapped his arms around her waist. Luce closed her eyes. She knew what was coming next. The most beautiful sound there was, that elegant whoosh of the love of her life letting out his driven snow-white wings. The world on the other side of Luce's eyelids darkened slightly under the shadow of his wings, and warmth welled in her heart. When she opened her eyes, there they were, as magnificent as ever. She leaned back a little, cozying into the wall of Daniel's chest as he pivoted toward the window.
"This is only a temporary separation," Daniel announced to the others. "Good luck, and wing speed."
With each long beat of Daniel's wings, they gained 1,000 feet. The air, once cool and thick with Georgia humidity, turned cold and brittle in Luce's lungs as they climbed. Wind tore at her ears. Her eyes began to tear. The ground below grew distant, and the world that it contained blended and shrank into a staggering canvas of green. Sword and Cross was the size of a thumbprint. Then it was gone. A first glimpse of the ocean made Luce dizzy, delighted as they flew away from the sun toward the darkness on the horizon. Flying with Daniel was more thrilling, more intense than her memory could ever do justice to. And yet, something had shifted. Luce had the hang of it by now. She felt at ease, in sync with Daniel, relaxed into the shape of his arms. Her legs were crossed lightly at the ankles, the heels of her boots kissing the toes of his. Their bodies swayed in unison, responding to the motion of his wings, which arched over their heads and blocked out the sun, then throttled backward to complete another mighty stroke. They passed the cloud line and vanished into the mist. There was nothing all around them but wispy white and the nebulous caress of moisture. Another beat of wings. Another surge into the sky. Luce didn't pause to wonder how she would breathe up here at the limits of the atmosphere. She was with Daniel. She was fine. They were off to save the world. Soon Daniel leveled off, flying less like a rocket and more like an unfathomably powerful bird. They did not slow. If anything, their velocity increased. But with their bodies parallel to the ground, the winds roar smooth, and the world seemed bright white and startlingly quiet, as peaceful as if it had just come into existence and no one had yet experimented with sound.
"Are you all right?"
His voice cocooned her, making her feel as if anything in the world that wasn't all right could be made so by love's concern. She tilted her head to the left to look at him. His face was calm, lips softly smiling. His eyes poured out a violet light so rich it alone could have kept her aloft.
"You're freezing," he murmured into her ear, stroking her fingers to warm them up, sending licks of heat through Luce's body.
"Better now," she said. They broke through the blanket of clouds. It was like that moment on an airplane when the view out the blurry oval window goes from monochrome gray to an infinite palette of color. The difference was that the window and the plane had fallen away, leaving nothing between her skin and the seashell pinks of evening-reaching clouds in the east, the garish indigo of high-altitude sky. The cloudscape presented itself, foreign and arresting. As ever, it found Luce unprepared. This was another world she and Daniel alone inhabited, a high world, the tips of the tallest minarets of love. What mortal hadn't dreamed of this? How many times had Luce yearned to be on the other side of an airplane window? To meander through the strange, pale gold of a sun-kissed rain cloud underfoot. Now she was here, and overcome with the beauty of a distant world she could feel on her skin. But Luce and Daniel could not stop. They could not stop once for the next 9 days, or everything would stop. "How long will it take to get to Venice?" she asked.
"It shouldn't be too much longer," Daniel almost whispered into her ear.
"You sound like a pilot who's been in a holding pattern for an hour, telling his passengers, 'Just another 10 minutes for the fifth time,'" Luce teased. When Daniel didn't respond, she looked up at him. He was frowning in confusion. The metaphor was lost on him. "You've never been on a plane," she said. "Why should you when you can do this?" She gestured at his gorgeous beating wings. "All the waiting and taxiing would probably drive you crazy."
"I'd like to go on a plane with you. Maybe we'll take a trip to the Bahamas. People fly there, right?"
"Yes," Luce swallowed. "Let's." She couldn't help thinking how many impossible things had to happen in precisely the right way for the two of them to be able to travel like a normal couple. It was too hard to think about the future right now when so much was at stake. The future was as blurry and distant as the ground below, and Luce hoped it would be as beautiful. "How long will it really take?"
4, maybe 5 hours at this speed.
"But won't you need to rest? Refuel?" Luce shrugged, still embarrassingly unsure of how Daniel's body worked. "Won't your arms get tired?" He chuckled. "What?"
"I just flew in from heaven, and boy, are my arms tired."
Daniel squeezed her waist, teasing.
"The idea of my arms ever tiring of holding you is absurd."
As if to prove it, Daniel arched his back, drawing his wings high above his shoulders and beating them once, lightly. As their bodies swept elegantly upward, skirting a cloud, he released one arm from around her waist, illustrating that he could hold her deftly with a single hand. His free arm curved forward, and Daniel brushed his fingers across her lips, waiting for her kiss. When she delivered it, he returned the arm to her waist and swept his other hand free, banking to the left dramatically. She kissed that hand, too. Then Daniel's shoulders flexed around hers, hugging them in an embrace, tight enough that he could release both arms from around her waist, and somehow, still, she stayed aloft. The feeling was so delicious, so joyful and unbounded, that Luce began to laugh. He made a great loop in the air. Her hair splashed all over her face. She was not afraid. She was flying. She took Daniel's hands as they found their way around her waist again. "It's kinda like we were made to do this," she said.
"Yes, kinda."
He flew on, never flagging. They shot through clouds and open air, through brief, beautiful rainstorms, drying off in the wind an instant later. They passed transatlantic planes at such tremendous speeds that Luce imagined the passengers inside not noticing anything but a brilliant, unexpected flash of silver, and perhaps a gentle nudge of turbulence, making little waves run through their drinks. The clouds thinned as they soared over the ocean. Luce could smell the briny weight of its depths all the way up here, and it smelled like an ocean from another planet, not chalky like shoreline, and not brackish like home. The glorious shadow of Daniel's wings on its hammered surface below was somehow comforting, though it was hard to believe that she was a part of the vision she saw in the roiling sea.
"Luce?" Daniel asked.
"Yes?"
"What was it like to be around your parents this morning?"
Her eyes traced the outline of a lonely pair of islands in the dark, watery plain below. She wondered distantly where they were, how far away from home.
"Hard," she admitted. "I guess I felt the way you must have felt a million times, at a distance from someone I love, because I can't be honest with them."
"I was afraid of that."
"In some ways it's easier to be around you and the other angels than it is to be around my own parents and my own best friend." Daniel thought for a moment.
"I don't want that for you. It shouldn't have to be like that. All I ever wanted was to love you."
"Me too. That's all I want." But even as she said it, looking out across the faded eastern sky, Luce couldn't stop replaying those last minutes at home, wishing she'd done things differently. She should have hugged her dad a little tighter. She should have listened, really listened, to her mom's advice as she walked out the door. She should have spent more time asking her best friend about her life back at Dover. She shouldn't have been so selfish or so rushed. Now, every second took her farther away from Thunderbolt and her parents and Callie, and every second Luce grappled with a growing feeling that she might not see any of them again. With all her heart, Luce believed in what she and Daniel and the other angels were doing. But this was not the first time she'd abandoned the people she cared about for Daniel. She thought about the funeral she'd witnessed in Prussia, the dark wool coats and damp red eyes of her loved ones, bleary with grief at her early, sudden death. She thought about her beautiful mother in medieval England, where she'd spent Valentine's Day, her sister, Helen, and her good friends, Laura and Eleanor. That was the one life she'd visited where she hadn't experienced her own death, but she'd seen enough to know that there were good people who would be shattered by Lucinda's inevitable demise. It made her stomach cramp to imagine. And then Luce thought of Lucia, the girl she'd been in Italy, who'd lost her family in the war, who didn't have anyone but Daniel, whose life, however short it was, had been worthwhile because of his love. When she pressed deeper into his chest, Daniel slid his hands up the sleeves of her sweater and ran his fingers in circles around her arms, as if he were drawing little halos on her skin.
"Tell me the best part of all your lives."
She wanted to say, "When I found you, every time." But it wasn't as simple as that. It was hard even to think of them discreetly. Her past lives began to swirl together and hiccup like the panels of a kaleidoscope. There was that beautiful moment in Tahiti when Lulu had tattooed Daniel's chest, and the way they'd abandoned a battle in ancient China because their love was more important than fighting any war. She could have listed a dozen sexy stolen moments, a dozen gorgeous, bittersweet kisses. Luce knew those weren't the best parts. The best part was now. That was what she would take with her from her journeys through the ages. He was worth everything to her, and she was worth everything to him. The only way to experience that deep level of their love was to enter each new moment together, as if time were made of clouds. And if it came down to it during these next 9 days, Luce knew that she and Daniel would risk everything for their love. "It's been an education," she finally said. "The first time I stepped through on my own, I was already determined to break the curse. But I was overwhelmed and confused until I started to realize that every life I visited, I learned something important about myself."
"Like what?"
They were so high that the suggestion of the Earth's curve was visible at the edge of the darkening sky. "I learned that just kissing you didn't kill me, that it had more to do with what I was aware of in the moment, how much of myself and my history I could take in." She felt Daniel nod behind her.
"That has always been the greatest enigma to me."
"I learned that my past selves weren't always very nice people, but you loved the soul inside of them anyway. And from your example, I learned how to recognize your soul. You have a specific glow, a brightness, and even when you stopped looking like your physical self, I could step into a new lifetime and recognize you. I would see your soul almost overlying whatever face you wore in each life. You would be your foreign Egyptian self and the Daniel I craved and loved." Daniel turned his head to kiss her temple.
"You probably don't realize this, but the power to recognize my soul has always been in you."
"No, I couldn't. I didn't used to be able to."
"You did. You just didn't know it. You thought you were crazy. You saw the announcers and called them shadows. You thought they were haunting you all your life. And when you first met me at Sword and Cross, or maybe when you first realized you cared for me, you probably saw something else you couldn't explain, something you tried to deny."
Luce clamped her eyes shut, remembering. "You used to leave a violet haze in the air when you passed by, but I'd blink and it would be gone." Daniel smiled.
"I didn't know that."
"What do you mean? You just said..."
"I imagined you saw something, but I didn't know what it was. Whatever attraction you recognized in me, in my soul, it would manifest differently depending on how you needed to see it."
He smiled at her.
"That's how your soul is in collaboration with mine. A violet glow is nice. I'm glad that's what it was."
"What does my soul look like to you?"
"I couldn't reduce it to words if I tried, but its beauty is unsurpassed."
That was a good way of describing this flight across the world with Daniel. The stars twinkled in vast galaxies all around them.
The moon was huge and dense with craters, half shrouded by pale gray cloud.
Luce was warm and safe in the arms of the angel she loved, a luxury she'd missed so much on her quest through the announcers. She sighed and closed her eyes and saw Bill. The vision was aggressive, invading her mind, though it was not the vile, seething beast Bill had become when she last saw him. He was just Bill, her flinty gargoyle, holding her hand to fly her down from the shipwrecked mast where she'd stepped through in Tahiti. Why that memory found her in Daniel's arms, she didn't know. But she could still feel the shape of his small stone hand in hers. She remembered how his strength and grace had astonished her. She remembered feeling safe with him. Now her skin crawled, and she writhed against Daniel uncomfortably.
What is it?
Bell. The word tasted sour.
Lucifer.
I know he's Lucifer. I know that. But for a while there, he was something else to me. Somehow, I thought of him as a friend. It haunts me how close I let him get. I'm ashamed.
Don't be.
Daniel hugged her close.
There's a reason he was called the Morning Star. Lucifer was beautiful. Some say he was the most beautiful.
Luce thought she detected a hint of jealousy in Daniel's tone.
He was the most beloved, too, not just by the throne, but by many of the angels. Think of the sway he holds over mortals. That power flows from the same source.
His voice wobbled, then grew very tight.
You shouldn't be ashamed of falling for him, Luce.
Daniel broke off suddenly, though it sounded like he had more to say. Things were getting tense between us, she admitted. But I never imagined that he could turn into such a monster.
There is no darkness as dark as a great light corrupted. Look.
Daniel shifted the angle of his wings, and they flew back in a wide arc, spinning around the outside of a towering cloud. One side was golden pink, lit by the last ray of evening sun. The other side, Luce noticed as they circled, was dark and pregnant with rain.
Bright and dark, rolled up together, both necessary for this to be what it is. It is like that for Lucifer.
And Cam, too? Luce asked, as Daniel completed the circle to resume their flight over the ocean.
I know you don't trust him, but you can. I do. Cam's darkness is legendary, but it is only a sliver of his personality.
But then why would he side with Lucifer? Why would any of the angels?
Cam didn't,
Daniel said.
Not at first, anyway. It was a very unstable time, unprecedented, unimaginable. At the time of the fall, there were some angels who sided with Lucifer right away. But there were others, like Cam, who were cast out by the throne for not choosing quickly enough. The rest of history has been a slow choosing of sides, with angels returning to the fold of heaven or the ranks of hell, until there are only a few unallied fallen left.
That's where we are now? Luce asked, even though she knew that Daniel didn't like to talk about how he still had not chosen a side.
You used to really like Cam, Daniel said,
sliding the subject away from himself.
For a handful of lifetimes on Earth, the three of us were very close. It was only much later, after Cam had suffered a broken heart, that he crossed over to Lucifer's side.
What? Who was she?
None of us like to talk about her. You must never let on that you know, Daniel said. I resented his choice, but I can't say I didn't understand it. If I ever truly lost you, I don't know what I would do. My whole world would dim.
That isn't going to happen, Luce said too quickly. She knew this lifetime was her last chance. If she died now, she would not come back. She had 1,000 questions about the woman Cam had lost, about the strange quake in Daniel's voice when he talked about Lucifer's appeal, about where she'd been when he was falling. But her eyelids felt heavy, her body slack with fatigue.
Rest, Daniel cooed in her ear. I'll wake you up when we're landing in Venice.
It was all the permission she needed to let herself drift off. She closed her eyes against the phosphorescent waves, crashing thousands of feet below, and flew into a world of dreams where 9 days had no significance, where she could dip and soar and linger in the glory of the clouds, where she could fly freely into infinity without the slightest chance of falling. 3. The Sunken Sanctuary. Daniel had been knocking on the weathered wooden door in the middle of the night for what felt to Luce like half an hour. The three-story Venetian townhouse belonged to a colleague, a professor, and Daniel was certain this man would let them crash because they had been great friends years ago, which, with Daniel, could encompass quite a span of time. "He must be a heavy sleeper," Luce yawned, half lulled back into sleep herself by the steady pounding of Daniel's fists. Either that, she thought blearily, or the professor was sitting in some bohemian all-night cafe, sipping wine over a book crammed with incomprehensible terms. It was 3 in the morning. Their touchdown, amid the silvery web of Venice's canals, had been accompanied by the chiming of a clock tower somewhere in the darkened distance of the city, and Luce was overcome with fatigue. She leaned miserably against the cold tin mailbox, causing it to wobble loose from one of the nails holding it upright. This sent the whole box slanting, making Luce stumble backward and nearly hurtle into the murky black-green canal, whose water lapped over the lip of the mossy stoop like an inky tongue. The whole exterior of the house seemed to be rotting in layers. From the painted blue wood peeling off the windowsills in slimy sheets, to red bricks crawling with dark green mold, to the damp cement of the stoop, which crumbled under their feet. For a moment, Luce thought she could actually feel the city sinking.
"He's got to be here," Daniel muttered, still pounding.
When they'd landed on the canal side ledge, usually accessed only by gondola, Daniel had promised Luce a bed inside, a hot drink, a respite from the damp and bracing wind they'd been flying through for hours. At last, the slow shuffling of feet thumping downstairs inside perked a shivering Luce to attention. Daniel exhaled and closed his eyes, relieved as the brass knob turned. Hinges moaned as the door swung open.
"Who the devil?"
The older Italian man's wiry tufts of white hair stood out at all angles from his head. He had sensationally bushy white eyebrows, a mustache to match, and thick white chest hair protruding from the V-neck of his dark gray robe. Luce watched Daniel blink in surprise, as if he was second-guessing their address. Then the old man's pale brown eyes lit up. He lurched forward, pulling Daniel into a tight embrace.
"I was beginning to wonder if you were going to visit before I kicked the inevitable bucket," the man whispered hoarsely.
His eyes traveled to Luce, and he smiled as if they hadn't woken him, as if he'd been expecting them for months.
"After all these years, you finally brought over Lucinda. What a treat."
His name was Professor Mazzotta. He and Daniel had studied history together at the University of Bologna in the 30s. He was not appalled or bewildered by Daniel's lack of aging. Mazzotta understood what Daniel was. He seemed to feel only joy at being reunited with an old friend, a joy that was augmented by the introduction to the love of that friend's life. He escorted them into his office, which was also a study of varying degrees of decay. His bookshelves dipped at their centers, his desk was piled with yellowing papers, the rug was worn to threads and splashed with coffee stains. Mazzotta set immediately to making each of them a cup of dense, hot chocolate. An old man's old bad habit, he rasped to Luce with a nudge. But Daniel barely took a sip before thrusting his book into Mazzotta's hands and opening it to the description of the first relic. Mazzotta slipped on thin, wire-framed glasses and squinted at the page, mumbling to himself in Italian. He stood up, walked to the bookshelf, scratched his head, turned back to the desk, paced the office, sipped his chocolate, then returned to the bookshelf to pull out a fat, leather-bound tome. Luce stifled a yawn. Her eyelids felt like they were working hard to hold up something heavy. She was trying not to drift, pinching the inside of her palm to keep herself awake. But Daniel's and Professor Mazzotta's voices met each other like distant clouds of fog as they argued over the impossibility of everything the other was saying.
"It's absolutely not a window pane from the Church of St. Ignatius,"
Mazzotta wrung his hands.
"Those are slightly hexagonal, and this illustration is resoundingly oblong."
"What are we doing here?"
Daniel suddenly shouted, rattling an amateur painting of a blue sailboat on the wall.
"We clearly need to be at the library at Bologna. Do you still have keys to get in? In your office, you must have had..."
"I became emeritus 13 years ago, Daniel, and we are not traveling 200 kilometers in the middle of the night to look at..."
He paused.
"Look at Lucinda. She's sleeping standing up like a horse."
Luce grimaced groggily. She was afraid to start down the path of a dream for fear she might meet Bill. He had a tendency to turn up when she closed her eyes these days. She wanted to stay awake, to stay away from him, to be a part of the conversation about the relic she and Daniel would need to find the next day. But sleep was insistent and would not be denied. Seconds or hours later, Daniel's arms lifted her from the ground and carried her up a dark and narrow flight of stairs.
"I'm sorry, Luce," she thought he said.
She was too deep asleep to respond.
"I should have let you rest sooner. I'm just so scared," he whispered. "Scared we're going to run out of time."
Luce blinked and shifted backward, surprised to find herself in a bed, further surprised by the single white peony in a short glass vase drooping under the pillow next to her head. She plucked the flower from its vase and twirled it in her palm, causing drops of water to bead on the brocaded rose duvet. The bed creaked as she propped the pillow up against the brass headboard to look around the room. For a moment, she felt disoriented by finding herself in an unfamiliar place, dreamed memories of traveling through the announcers slowly fading as she fully awoke. She no longer had Bill to give her clues about where she'd ended up. He was only there in her dreams, and the previous night he'd been Lucifer, a monster, laughing at the idea that she and Daniel could change or stop a thing. A white envelope was propped against the vase on the nightstand. Daniel. She remembered only a single soft, sweet kiss and his arms pulling away as he'd tucked her into bed the previous night and shut the door. Where had he gone after that? She ripped open the envelope and slid out the stiff, white card it held. On the card were three words, "On the balcony." Smiling, Luce threw back the covers and heaved her legs over the side of the bed. She padded across the giant woven rug, the white peony scissored between her fingers. The windows in the bedroom were tall and narrow and rose nearly 20 feet to the cathedral ceiling. Behind one of the rich brown curtains was a glass door leading out to a terrace. She turned the metal latch and stepped outside, expecting to find Daniel and sink into his arms. But the crescent moon-shaped terrace was empty. Just a short stone railing and a one-story drop to the green waters of the canal, and a small glass-topped table with a red canvas folding chair beside it. The morning was beautiful. The air smelled murky but crisp. On the river, shiny, narrow black gondolas glided past one another, as elegantly as swans. A pair of speckled thrushes chirped from a clothesline one floor up, and on the other side of the canal was a row of cramped pastel apartments. It was charming, sure, the Venice of most people's dreams. But Luce wasn't here to be a tourist. She and Daniel were here to save their history and the world's. And the clock was ticking, and Daniel was gone. Then she noticed a second white envelope on the balcony table, propped up against a tiny white to-go cup and a small paper bag. Again, she tore open the card, and again found only three words, "Please wait here." "Annoying, yet romantic," she said aloud. She sat down on the folding chair and peered inside the paper bag. A handful of tiny, jam-filled donuts, dusted with cinnamon and sugar, sent up an intoxicating scent. The bag was warm in her hands, flecked with little bits of oil seeping through. Luce popped one into her mouth and took a sip from the tiny white cup, which contained the richest, most delightful espresso Luce had ever tasted.
"Enjoying the bombolini?" Daniel called from below.
Luce shot to her feet and leaned over the railing to find him standing at the back of a gondola painted with images of angels. He wore a flat straw hat bound with a thick red ribbon and used a broad wooden paddle to steer the boat slowly toward her. Her heart surged the way it did each time she first saw Daniel in another life. But he was here. He was hers. This was happening now.
"Dip them in the espresso, then tell me what it's like to be in heaven," Daniel said, smiling up at her.
"How do I get down to you?" she called. He pointed to the narrowest spiral staircase Luce had ever seen, just to the right of the railing. She grabbed the coffee and bag of donuts, slipped the peony stem behind her ear, and made for the steps. She could feel Daniel's eyes on her as she climbed over the railing and slinked down the stairs. Every time she made a full rotation on the staircase, she caught a teasing flash of his violet eyes. By the time she made it to the bottom, he had extended his hand to help her onto the boat. There was the electricity she'd been yearning for since she awoke, the spark that passed between them every time they touched. Daniel wrapped his arms around her waist and drew her in so that there was no space between their bodies. He kissed her, long and deep, until she was dizzy.
"Now that's the way to start a morning."
Daniel's fingers traced the petals of the peony behind her ear. A slight weight suddenly tugged at her neck, and when she reached up, her hands found a fine chain, which her fingers traced down to a silver locket. She held it out and looked at the red rose engraved on its face. Her locket! It was the one Daniel had given to her on her last night at Sword and Cross. She'd kept it tucked in the front cover of the Book of the Watchers during the short time she'd spent alone in the cabin, but everything about those days was blurry. The next thing she remembered was Mr. Cole rushing her to the airport to catch her flight to California. She hadn't remembered the locket or the book until she'd arrived at Shoreline, and by then she was certain she'd lost them. Daniel must have slipped it around her neck when she was sleeping. Her eyes teared again, this time with happiness.
"Where did you..."
"Open it."
Daniel smiled. The last time she'd held the locket, the image of a former Luce and Daniel had baffled her. Daniel said he'd tell her when the photograph had been taken the next time he saw her. That hadn't happened. Their stolen time together in California had been mostly stressful and too brief, filled with silly arguments she couldn't imagine having with Daniel anymore. Luce was glad to have waited, because when she opened the locket this time and saw the tiny photograph behind its glass plate, Daniel in a bow tie and Luce with coiffed short hair, she instantly recognized what it was.
"Lucia," she whispered.
It was the young nurse Luce had encountered when she'd stepped through into World War I Milan. The girl had been much younger when Luce met her, sweet and a little sassy, but so genuine, Luce had admired her right away. She smiled now, remembering the way Lucia kept staring at Luce's shorter, modern haircut, and the way Lucia joked that all the soldiers had a crush on Luce. She remembered mostly that if Luce had stayed at the Italian hospital a little longer, and if the circumstances had been, well, entirely different, the two of them could have been great friends. She looked up at Daniel, beaming, but her expression quickly darkened. He was staring at her as if he'd been punched. "What's wrong?" She let go of the locket and stepped into him, wrapping her arms around his neck. He shook his head, stunned.
"I'm just not used to being able to share this with you. The look on your face when you recognized that picture, it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen."
Luce blushed and smiled and felt speechless and wanted to cry all at once. She understood Daniel completely.
"I'm sorry I left you alone like that," he said. "I had to go and check something in one of Mazzotta's books in Bologna. I figured you'd need every bit of rest you could get, and you looked so beautiful asleep, I couldn't bear to wake you up."
"Did you find what you were looking for?" Luce asked.
"Possibly. Mazzotta gave me a clue about one of the piazzas here in town. He's mostly an art historian, but he knows his divinity better than any mortal I've ever met."
Luce slid down to the gondola's low red velvet bench, which was like a love seat, with a padded black leather cushion and a high sculpted back. Daniel sank the oar into the water, and the boat slid forward. The water was a bright pastel green, and as they glided, Luce could see the whole city reflected in the glassy wobble of its surface.
"The good news," Daniel said,
looking down at her from under the brim of his hat,
"is that Mazzotta thinks he knows where the artifact is located. I kept him up bickering until sunrise, but we finally matched my sketch to an interesting old photograph."
"And?"
"As it turns out..."
Daniel flicked his wrist, and the gondola curved gracefully around a tight corner, then dipped under the low slant of a footbridge.
"The serving tray is a halo."
"A halo? I thought only angels on greeting cards had halos." She cocked her head at Daniel. "Do you have a halo?" Daniel smiled, as if he found the question charming.
"Not in the golden ring fashion, I don't think. As far as we can tell, halos are representations of our light, in a way that mortals can comprehend. The violet light you saw around me at Sword and Cross, for example. I'm guessing Gabby never told you stories about posing for Da Vinci."
"She did what?" Luce almost choked on her bombolini.
"He didn't know she was an angel, of course, but according to her, Leonardo talked about the light that seemed to radiate from within her. That's why he painted her with a halo circling her head."
"Wow." Luce shook her head, astonished, as they glided past a pair of lovers in matching felt fedoras, kissing in a balcony corner.
"It's not just him. Artists have been depicting angels that way since we first fell to Earth."
"And the halo we need to find today?"
"Another artist's depiction."
Daniel's face grew somber. The brass of a scratchy jazz record drifted out an open window and seemed to fill the space around the gondola, scoring Daniel's narration.
"This one is a sculpture of an angel, and much older, from the pre-classical era. So old, the artist's identity is unknown. It's from Anatolia, and, like the rest of these artifacts, was stolen during the Second Crusade."
"So we just go find the sculpture in a church, or a museum, or whatever, lift the halo off the angel's head, and sprint to Mount Sinai?" Luce asked. Daniel's eyes darkened for a split second.
"For now, yes, that's the plan."
"That sounds too simple," Luce said, noting the intricacies of the buildings around her, the high onion-domed windows in one, the verdant herb garden creeping out the window of another. Everything seemed to be sinking into the bright green water, with a kind of serene surrender. Daniel stared past her, the sunlit water reflecting in his eyes.
We'll see how simple it is.
He squinted at a wooden sign farther down the block, then steered them out of the center of the canal. The gondola rocked as Daniel guided it to a stop against a brick wall crawling with vines. He grabbed hold of one of the mooring poles and knotted the gondola's rope around it. The boat groaned and strained against its bindings.
This is the address Mazzotta gave me.
Daniel gestured at an ancient curved stone bridge, somewhere between romantic and decrepit.
We'll head up these stairs toward the palazzo. It shouldn't be far.
He hopped out of the gondola and onto the sidewalk, holding out his hand for Luce. She followed his lead, and together they crossed the bridge, hand in hand. As they walked past bakery stand after bakery stand, and vendors selling Venice t-shirts, Luce couldn't help looking around at all the other happy couples. Everyone here seemed to be kissing, laughing. She tugged the peony out from behind her ear and slipped it inside her purse. She and Daniel were on a mission, not a honeymoon, and there would never be another romantic encounter if they failed. Their pace quickened as they turned left onto a narrow street, then right into a broad, open piazza. Daniel stopped abruptly.
It is supposed to be here, in the square.
He looked down at the address, shaking his head in weary disbelief. What's wrong?
The address Mazzotta gave me is that church. He didn't tell me that.
He pointed at the tall, spired Franciscan building, with its triangle of stained glass roseate windows. It was a massive, commanding chapel, with a pale orange exterior and bright white trim around its windows and its large dome.
The sculpture, the halo, must be inside.
Okay. Luce took a step toward the church, giving Daniel a bewildered shrug. Let's go in and check it out. Daniel shifted his weight. His face suddenly looked pale.
I can't, Luce.
Why not? Daniel's body had stiffened with a palpable nervousness. His arms seemed nailed to his sides, and his jaw was clenched so tightly it could have been wired. She wasn't used to Daniel's being anything other than confident. This was strange behavior.
Then you don't know, he asked.
Luce shook her head, and Daniel sighed.
I thought maybe at Shoreline. They might have taught you. The thing is, actually, if a fallen angel enters a sanctuary of God, the structure and all those inside it burst into flames.
He finished his sentence quickly, just as a group of plaid-skirted German schoolgirls on a tour passed them in the piazza, filing toward the entrance of the church. Luce watched as a few of them turned to look at Daniel, whispering and giggling to each other, smoothing their braids, in case he happened to glance their way. He fixed on Luce. He still seemed nervous.
It's one of the many lesser-known details of our punishment. If a fallen angel desires to re-enter the jurisdiction of the grace of God, we must approach the throne directly. There are no shortcuts.
You are saying you've never set foot in a church? Not once in the thousands of years you've been here?
Daniel shook his head.
Or a temple, or a synagogue, or a mosque? Never. The closest I've come is the natatorium at Sword and Cross. When it was desanctified and repurposed as a gym, the taboo was lifted.
He closed his eyes.
Arian did once, very early on, before she'd reallied herself with heaven. She didn't know any better. The way she describes it.
Is that where she got the scars on her neck? Luce touched her own neck instinctively, thinking back to her first hour at Sword and Cross. Arian, handing over a stolen Swiss Army knife, demanding that Luce give her a haircut. She hadn't been able to take her eyes off the angel's strange, marbled scars.
No.
Daniel looked away, uncomfortable.
That was something else.
A group of tourists were posing with their guide in front of the entrance. In the time they had been talking, 10 people had drifted into and out of the church without seeming to appreciate the building's beauty or its import. And yet Daniel, Arian, and a whole legion of angels could never step inside. But Luce could. "I'll go. I know what the halo looks like from your sketch. If it's in there, I'll find it, and..."
"You can enter, it's true."
Daniel nodded curtly.
"There is no other way."
"No problem." Luce feigned nonchalance.
"I'll wait right here."
Daniel looked reluctant and relieved at the same time. He squeezed her hand and sat down on the raised rim of a fountain in the center of the square and explained what the halo should look like and how to remove it.
"But be careful. It's more than 1,000 years old and delicate."
Behind him, a cherub spat out an unending stream of water.
"If you have any trouble, Luce, if anything looks even remotely suspicious, run back out here and find me."
The church was dark and cool, a cross-shaped structure with low rafters and the heavy scent of incense cloaking the air. Luce picked up an English pamphlet from the entryway, then realized she didn't know what the name of the sculpture was. Annoyed with herself for not asking, Daniel would have known. She walked up the narrow nave, past row after row of empty pews, her eyes tracing the stained glass stations of the cross lining the high windows. Though the piazza outside had been bustling with people, the church was relatively quiet. Luce was conscious of the sound of her riding boots on the marble floor as she passed a statue of the Madonna in one of the small gated chapels lining either side of the church. The statue's flat marble eyes seemed impossibly big, her fingers impossibly long and thin, pressed together in prayer. Luce did not see the halo anywhere. At the end of the nave, she stood in the center of the church, under the great dome, which let the tempered glow of morning sunlight brush through its towering windows. A man in a long gray robe kneeled before an altar. His pale face and white hands, cupped to his heart, were the only parts of his body exposed. He was chanting in Latin under his breath. "Dies irae, dies illa." Luce recognized the words from her Latin class at Dover, but couldn't remember what they meant. As she approached, the man's chant broke off, and he lifted his head as if her presence had disrupted his prayer. His skin was as pale as any she'd ever seen, his thin lips almost colorless as they frowned at her. She looked away and turned left into the transept, the shorter aisle that formed the cross shape of the church, in an effort to give the man his space, and found herself before a formidable angel. It was a statue, sculpted from smooth, pale pink marble, utterly different from the angels Luce had come to know so well. There was none of the fierce vitality she found in Cam, none of the infinite complexities she adored in Daniel. This was a statue created by the stolidly faithful for the stolidly faithful. To Luce, the angel seemed empty. He was looking up toward heaven, and his sculpted body shone through the soft ripples of fabric draped across his chest and waist. His face, tilted skyward, 10 feet above Luce's own, had been chiseled delicately by someone with a practiced touch, from the ridge of his nose to the tiny tufts of hair curled above his ear. His hands gestured toward the sky, as if asking forgiveness from someone above for a long-ago committed sin.
"Buongiorno."
A sudden voice made Luce jump. She hadn't seen the priest appear in the heavy, floor-length black robe, had not seen the rectory at the edge of the transept, from whose carved mahogany door the priest had just emerged. He had a waxy nose and large earlobes, and was tall enough to tower over her, which made her uneasy. She forced a smile and took a step away. How was she going to steal a relic from a public place like this? Why hadn't she thought about that before in the piazza? She couldn't even speak. Then she remembered. She could speak Italian. She'd learned it, more or less, instantly, when she'd stepped through the announcer into the front lines of war near the Piave River. "This is a beautiful sculpture," she said to the priest. Her Italian wasn't perfect. She spoke more like she used to be fluent years ago, but had lost her confidence. Still, her accent was good enough, and the priest seemed to understand.
"Indeed, it is."
"The artist's work with the chisel," she said, spreading her arms wide, as though she were critically regarding the work. "It is like he freed the angel from the stone." Drawing her wide eyes back to the sculpture, trying to look as innocent as possible, Luce took a spin around the angel. Sure enough, a golden, glass-filled halo capped his head. Only, it wasn't chipped in the places Daniel's sketch had suggested. Maybe it had been restored. The priest nodded sagely and said,
"No angel was ever free after the sin of the fall. The able eye can see that as well."
Daniel had told her the trick to releasing the halo from the angel's head. To grasp the halo like a steering wheel and give it two firm but gentle counterclockwise turns. Because it's made of glass and gold, it had to be added to the sculpture later. So a base is carved into the stone and a matching hole fashioned into the halo. Just two strong but careful twists. That would loosen it from its base. She glanced up at the vast statue towering over her and the priest's heads. Right. The priest came to stand beside Luce.
"This is Raphael, the healer."
Luce didn't know any angels named Raphael. She wondered if he was real or a church invention.
I read in a guidebook that it dates back to before the classical era.
She eyed the thin beam of marble connecting the halo to the angel's head.
"Wasn't this sculpture brought to the church during the Crusades?"
The priest swept his arms over his chest, and the long, loose sleeves of his robe bunched up at the elbow.
"You are thinking of the original. It sat just south of Dorso Duro, in the Chiesa di Piccoli Miracoli, on the island of the Seals, and disappeared with the church on the island when both, as we know, sank into the sea centuries ago."
"No," Luce swallowed hard. "I didn't know that." His round brown eyes fixed on hers.
"You must be new to Venice," he said. "Eventually everything here crumbles into the sea. It isn't so bad, really. How else would we become so skilled at reproductions?"
He glanced up at the angel, ran his long brown fingers across the marble plinth.
"This one was created on commission for only 50,000 lire. Isn't it remarkable?"
It wasn't remarkable. It was awful. The real halo had sunk into the sea? They would never find it now. They would never learn the true location of the fall. They would never be able to stop Lucifer from destroying them. They'd only just begun this journey, and already it seemed that all was lost. Luce stumbled backward, barely finding the breath to thank the priest. Feeling heavy and unbalanced, she nearly tripped over the pale supplicant, who scowled at her as she walked quickly to the door. As soon as she crossed the threshold, she broke into a run. Daniel caught her by the elbow at the fountain.
"What happened?"
Her face must have given everything away. She relayed the story to him, growing more despondent with each word. By the time she got to the way the priest had bragged about the bargain reproduction, a tear was sliding down her cheek.
"You're sure he called the cathedral La Chiesa di Piccoli Miracoli?" Daniel said, spinning around to look across the piazza.
"On the island of the seals?"
"I'm sure, Daniel. It's gone. It's buried under the ocean."
"And we're going to find it."
"What? How?"
He had already grabbed her by the hand and, with one sideways glance back through the doors of the church, started to jog across the square. "Daniel,
you know how to swim."